Shalim, did Mateo kill Santiago?
We'll find out.
That's the question I asked actor Shalim Ortiz about the season finale cliffhanger of ABC's Grand Hotel. Will ABC renew a season two? But before you hear Shalim's response, welcome to episode 125 of the highly relevant podcast, A Latin X Show, where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. Film and culture critic Mike Sargent stops by to help me discuss Jennifer Lopez's new movie Hustlers out this week. She's getting a lot of Oscar talk for her performance, but what about the movie? Was it any good? Then Shalim Ortiz talks Grand Hotel and every question you have wanted answered. So what do you say? Let's begin with Hustlers.
These Wall Street guys, you see what they did to this country? They stole from everybody. Hardworking people lost everything. And not one of these douchebags went to jail.
The game is rigged, and it does not reward people who play by the rules.
Joining me now is Mike Sargent, film and culture critic for WBAI Radio and Fox News with Maria Bartiromo and other media platforms, talking about movies and culture. And he's a special friend of the show for a long while now. And I'm always very happy to have him. I give you a lot of love here, right, Mike?
Listen, I love the love. I love the love.
Of course you do, Mike.
I love the love.
And by the way, you know who's been getting a lot of love? Hustlers, the movie.
And I think there's a number. We're going to discuss it. And I'm kind of excited because I've been thinking about it since I saw it. And I want to describe what it was like for me. But I'm very curious what you thought of the film on several levels. What's your perspective, Jack?
Well, Jennifer Lopez, man, was wow in that film. And that's the second time I saw that film.
I agree with you. Jennifer Lopez is at a very interesting and specific stage of her career. You know, she can really own who she is, you know, failure, successes, all of it. She's a self-created icon. She's the ultimate diva. She's the ultimate Latina diva. And she's just done so much. And you could kind of take for granted, but it's just amazing if you really looked at her career and resume. So I agree with you, and I think she completely owns this film every time she's on screen.
Owned it. Owned every scene. Owned the scenes with Cardi B. Owned the scenes with Constance Wu. Owned the scenes with Lizzo. Owned the scenes with everybody. And you know, here's the thing about Jennifer Lopez. There's now all of... I mean, I said this last week. You heard it in the podcast. As soon as I saw it... Jennifer Lopez will be considered for award nomination. What happened yesterday? Dude, like 20 articles came out. Variety, Hollywood, The Guardian.
Yep.
All the big trades. Jennifer Lopez, Oscar buzz. It was obvious, Mike. She was the best thing in that movie.
Well, not only was she the best thing in that movie, but here's what's interesting, especially, you know, just if you want to touch upon the idea of a Latina in Hollywood, like... Okay, you could take anybody's career, any white of her white counterparts, and say, okay, wow, look at the roles that this person missed out on, or that person missed out on. And no, just in acting, not talk about music at all, but just in acting, say, oh, well, they could have done this role. But Jennifer Lopez, you know, similar to Penelope Cruz, Hollywood doesn't really know what to do with Jennifer Lopez. they don't really have like powerful roles for Latina. People would down her for playing non-Latina roles or roles where she really plays down. But the reality is, you know, she's still got to do, you know, such and such Made in Manhattan. She's still got to do a lot of things, not unlike an Octavia Spencer or a lot of black actresses who they're still fighting to get the good roles, the roles that have something to say beyond being a Latina, beyond the ethnicity that will lift up people's perspective of such things. So I think it's smart of her to get involved with this project. It's a perfect project for her. She looks great. She works hard, and she does something that only a really great, not just an actor, but a movie star can do. She makes you like a very unlikable character. The key to a successful film, a film that you're going to care about the characters, liking or caring about somebody who's not so likable, is the chemistry, the relationships, just how human these people are. You know, the fact that in my opinion, if there was any flaw to this film, you know, it's not that there's not enough Cardi B. If there's any flaw to this film, it would be that the tone is somewhat uneven. But in many ways,
I'll explain about tone and uneven.
In many ways, this movie starts one way. Okay, we see a setup. We see activity, the camera's moving. Then all of a sudden, we meet Jennifer Lopez. And the movie takes a very different tone, okay? We see her in this setup. She's lit, and she's like the ultimate diva on the roof. But then all of a sudden, as you start to get to know her, okay, there's this whole... almost what seems like improv of them teaching her, the both Jennifer Lopez and Cardi B teaching Constance Wu how to dance on the pole. And what you see is something you almost never see in a film, especially in a film about women like this, is how these women bond. Not in the ways you right. typically...
Well, Magic Mike did that with strippers. It's just they were male, but you don't...
Yeah, but Magic Mike, I don't even think can touch what this film does, in my opinion. And I like Magic Mike, but I don't think it can touch it because we're talking about a whole different kind of thing. And it does, Magic Mike. But male bonding, we've seen forever. Female bonding, especially in an environment where they're all being objectified, they're all being, they're all making choices.
By the way,
they're
being objectified because of their own will. No one's forcing them to do that.
Well, you see, now that's a perception. That's a perception. And I disagree with that perception. I disagree with that perception 100%. And as a matter of fact, I think that's part of the point of the film. You know, it's very easy to stand back and say, well, you could do something else. Nobody's forcing you to be a stripper. Well, let me just tell you something. If you're in a situation where you need money, you don't have skills, you don't have a degree, you don't have whatever it is, and you have a child or bills to pay, or what are you going to do? You know, some people will do something illegal or sell drugs. Some people will, you know, do something that's backbreaking or drive a truck or do something. You know, but what choices does a young woman have? Okay. Now, if she's pretty, there's a choice, an option she has that you and I don't have. Okay. Because of the way society's set up. And that choice, to make that choice, you know, however you, that's what I also thought was strong about this film, especially Constance Wu's character. You know, there's a point where you see she did it. She had to stop doing it because the market fell out of Wall Street and the clients went away. But then she tried to do something else. She didn't want to go back to doing this. Nobody does. Okay. You know, I shouldn't say nobody does, but let's just say when you're making this choice very often, I don't know how many strippers you've known or any women in the sex industry, because, you know, read whatever you want into it, but I've known a number of them. And it is a conflict. The money's good, but it's like the golden handcuffs. And that's something that this film deals with too, addiction and greed and money and how it corrupts you, how it perverts you. The same people who they felt are worthy victims, they became very much like them.
Well, I think what you're really talking about here is the moral circumstances in which the film places these characters.
What you don't get, and they only touch upon here, is just how abusive these men are to
these
women.
That is true.
Okay, and that is a serious thing. I mean, you don't just one day decide, oh, okay, I'm going to rip these guys off. You know, I don't even want to say here things that I've heard that men do. You know, how they will stuff the money on some of these, all the kinds of things that men do. And again, I'll liken it to...
Well, I think a great example of that is when Constance Wu's character is telling the story to the journalist, Jessica, about how she had to give oral sex to this one guy that promised her $300. And when he put the money down, it was actually three $20 bills.
All right. And that's, in my opinion, that's the least of it. That's a good example.
Maybe it's a PG-13 example.
It's a PG-13 example of just how little respect these men have for these women.
I think that's most of society, though. How many people do you know actually respect strippers as role models in our industry or in our society?
Forget role models. How about just human beings? Okay. That's the point. And that's the point of this. I feel that, you know, I don't want to give away too much of the film because there's a line towards the end of the film where, you know, the Constance Wu's character is observing, reading the article that she participated in. She has new you know, viewpoints on why this all happened. And I think that this is an exploration of the human condition. And I really liken, you know, what happens to strippers and their views towards men is very, I can liken it to how cops are to the rest of society, especially people of color. You know, they have this point of view and there are others who have this point of view. And now we all kind of, it's an us and them. You know, and there, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that goes to a strip club, and I'm not saying anything negative about men who do, but there's definitely a culture that's
with corporate executives, especially Wall Street guys,
all of it,
who are married.
The idea that you can buy someone, buy their time, that they're a commodity that you can trade. You can trade them to your friend, and you can buy one for your friend, and all those kind of things. Being objectified in that way by another human, it doesn't matter what the exchange has an effect, and it has a compound effect.
What about the moviegoers? I mean, do moviegoers want to see this type of movie? My wife wanted to see it bad. And when she saw it, she said, I really liked it.
Well, there it is. And I think the reasons that a woman will like this are things that the man, most men won't even see are in this film. There are a number of things that we've seen many times before, but we're seeing it through the lens of a female writer. We're seeing the same interaction, the same moment we've seen on film at least a half a dozen times, a half a dozen other movies, but it has a completely different resonance because the person and the people involved, you know, have a different take on how this goes down and how some of the exchange goes down. So honestly, I think that this is a movie that, even though we got some critics raving now, I think there'll be enough naysayers, okay, that will keep let's just say, I think that the movie's going to do well beyond expectations.
Absolutely.
I think audiences are going to like it even more than the critics. That's what I think.
It doesn't make my top 10 yet. I think there's so many movies at Venice, at New York, at Toronto, at Telluride, at Sundance. So I think there's enough films here to push Hustlers down to top 20, top 25.
I think that this is a crowd-pleasing movie. I think that this is going to play very, very well, and this is the kind of movie that's going to be quoted and memed for quite some time to come.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. All right, Mike, thank you so much. You can catch Mike Sargent on WBAI Radio and Fox News, and also here on the Highly Relevant Podcast. Thanks a lot for everything, man.
Thanks, Jack Rico.
And before I talk to Shaleen, here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend.
Comencemos, Jungle Fire.
Así que baila pa' mí, baila pa' mí. Me gusta la manera cuando me lo muevas. Así que baila pa' mí.
Como un bebé, J Balvin and Bad Bunny.
Baila pa' mí, baila pa' mí.
Sacrificio, Shalim.
So, Shaleem Ortiz, I'm not sure if many of you know, Shaleem, you and I go way back. We go like about 20 years, right?
Double digits, man. Yep. Double digits.
Jeez, man. It's been such a long time. You know, it's been such a pleasure seeing you grow as a professional, as a person. I mean, we met at Univision when you were just promoting Nadie Como Tú. And then afterwards, Cuartos Sin Puertas, which, by the way, is in my top 10 Latin pop albums, you know, I've ever heard. And I just love that album so much, man. I hope I haven't freaked you out with how much I love that album.
No, I'm humbled, man. But I am a witness that your love for that album is definitely one of a kind.
And it's shared. The other day on Instagram, you put a throwback photo of Nadie Como Tú in Cuartos Sin Puertas. Your comments exploded.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel, man? That people all this time, was it 19 years?
Yeah, pretty much. My first album released in 2001, and my second album came out, I believe, 2003. So yeah, that, do the math. That's like 18 years.
18 years. And I still hear it in the car.
Amor 93.1. Aquí está la nueva. De Shalim.
You nailed it.
Donde corre la sangre. I mean, it's my favorite song.
Donde corre la sangre.
Donde
yeah.
corre la sangre. So listen, I want to talk about so many other stuff that's going on with you right now, especially Grand Hotel that just ended. And I want to talk to you about how you feel. Where are you musically these days, dude?
I'm nowhere specific. You could say that for the first time, I'm entertaining the thought of maybe participating in some sort of performance that I don't have very, very clear in my head. But
right, you're starting to evoke thoughts of
yeah.
maybe doing something for the fans.
Yeah, listen. To be honest, one of my favorite parts of my journey as a performer, as a singer, was when I would do my acoustic concerts. And I can be totally honest about this, but it was through those acoustic concerts that I learned how to sing live, to a point where I felt comfortable doing so.
Wow.
That's where you get that street, you know, experience, you know, that nothing else teaches you. You
that
know,
live
no,
shit,
no
man.
Yeah,
yeah, being live. What does that feel like, dude, to perform live in front of 20,000? Like, what's the most amount of people you've performed to?
Well, I did a couple of Plaza de Toros.
Damn, in Madrid?
In Spain. Yeah, I did Madrid. I did one in Valencia. I think Valencia was one of the most intense ones because it was like this multi-talent concert that had Paulina Rubio, Tiziano Ferro, David Bisbal, Bustamante, and myself. It was like one of
the next
of those,
generation.
Yeah, and that, I'm not sure if that was the most amount of people, but it was one of the most magical nights because I remember giving off the microphone to the public, to the audience, and they would sing the chorus of Nadie Como Tú along with me. And
yeah, that must have been insane. So right after your music career, you jumped right into acting and you got Heroes on NBC, which at the time was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
It was probably the biggest show on television. Then you went on to do Magic City on Stars,
mm-hmm.
Several telenovelas on Telemundo and Univision.
Mm-hmm.
And it all led you to this moment right now on ABC Prime Time playing Mateo on Grand Hotel, which just ended its season finale. And people went nuts on social media after that cliffhanger. But the problem is ABC has been mum. So I guess the question I have to ask you, my man, is what do you know so far?
We haven't heard anything yet. We haven't heard yes or no. And every time everybody's on a bubble, I think, you know, we all feel the same way. We're like, well, we could get the final word any minute now. But yeah, it's a little bittersweet. Not going to lie.
Social media is going crazy.
Social media is going
crazy. They're going crazy. Nuts. The season finale was a stream. You guys been trending for the last 3 weeks. Top 10. The ratings went through the roof on this one. On the last episode, I believe they're re-airing it next Monday.
For yes, I heard that. I heard that apparently is going to, maybe wrong, but I read that they're going to re-air the season finale next Monday at 9 p.m. after Dancing with the Stars.
If you haven't heard an official word yet, it's because they're mulling this over in the executive rooms. This is like 50-50, man. Like, it's where the wind blows that particular day. And I think that there's a sense that this show is important for obvious reasons, you know? It's the first Hispanic family on mainstream primetime TV broadcast.
Drama.
Yeah, drama, because yeah. George Lopez has done it in comedy, but this format is a drama.
We may be wrong, but this could very well be, if not the first, definitely one of the first Latinx prominent, diverse primetime drama show ever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's really multicultural. Like, I remember going to set with you and meeting everybody, and it was just like...
Randy, Raquel Robinson, Chris Warren, amazing actors. And then you get an Australian, Lincoln Unis, you know?
Exactamente.
And then you get this whole Latinx cast, Demian, Rosalind.
By the way, Denise Tantz, she's Latina, right? She's Salvadorian.
I believe her mother is Salvadorian. Yeah, that's correct.
Yo, Denise does not read Latina to me.
At all.
And Brian doesn't read Latino to me either. But then, and see, here's the thing. Because in my personal life, I understand that, I lived in Miami. There were white Cubans that looked like Germans to me.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, how could you possibly be Latino? And that's me being ignorant to the fact that the Hispanic race, culture, and language doesn't necessarily mean an association to a particular skin color, because it's not completely a homogenous society. So that's the beauty of the Hispanic culture.
Adding to that, I think one beautiful thing about Grand Hotel is that it also embraces those Latinos who are first generation, like the Mian Bichir, and it embraces their accent and and the way they speak English. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's beautiful, man. I really think that is the future, you know? Diego Luna in Star Wars, you know?
Rogue One.
I mean, he speaks English.
Pedro Pascal in The Mandalorian now.
Yeah, although Pedro is borderline American. Like, he really has almost zero accent,
Dude, let's talk about Oscar Isaac. Told you Oscar Isaac era Guatemalteco, you wouldn't believe me.
Yeah. Raised in Miami.
But when all of his movies, there's no trace of him, of his Latino-ness at all. He reads American, like American mainstream, you know?
Yes, he does. But that's, that again, that's what's amazing about this, that, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you have an accent, whether you don't have an accent. It matters that you are you and that you're an individual, you're unique, and no one can take that away from those who happen to have an accent, you know?
How did you come up with Mateo then?
The moment I read the sides are those scenes they give you to do the casting, I always felt a coldness in his delivery. Don't ask me why, but I remember cold reading those lines that were written. And of course, they were written a certain way. And I want to guess that they were looking for that. You know, they were looking for that poker face cold neutrality, you know, that neutral tone that would make him cold hearted. And, you know, one of the scenes in the casting was when Ingrid tells Mateo that she's pregnant, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember when I read that, Mateo goes like, you know what? I'll make an appointment and we can go together, you know?
And that was a great scene, I remember.
She goes, what do you mean? And he goes, yeah, we can go together, take care of it. You know, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything.
Let's do this. Let me know when you make the appointment. I'll take the day off and we can go together.
The appointment?
Of course, I'll pay for everything. You don't need to worry about that.
So sly. That's the thing about... By the way, man, I've always told you that the thing about Mateo is that you can never know who he really is. Is he a nice guy or is he a bad guy? And I don't remember, I'm sure I asked you, I just don't remember your response. So refresh my memory. Was that deliberate to make him ambiguous, or did you kind of organically fall into that?
I think I organically fell into that because I remember from day one, remember when I shot my first scene that I asked Eva to please trust me because I made him very, very neutral and cold, a little colder than they almost directed me, you know? So it was a little risque, you know, to back that. But I really thank Ken Olin and Eva, Ken, who was the director, for trusting me to do this. But
so they gave you all the creative freedom to do what you felt Mateo needed to be.
Yes. Mm. But then when Teresa comes into play, played by Katie Sagal. Amazing, you know,
love and
queen
marriage.
Katie Sagal.
I know people are gonna be like, what? I never saw Sons of Anarchy. So I never saw her in that show. Therefore, the only real image I have is, you know, Married with Children. So
yes.
I remember I went to LA. I went into the makeup room with you, and she walks in, dude. Yo pensé que perdí la mente. I thought I lost my mind for a second, dude.
Yeah.
That was a crazy moment for me.
That was a moment, yeah.
And I was like paralyzed for like a second, starstruck. Dude, if I was starstruck, how did it feel to actually share scenes with her?
Man, listen, it's almost a harder acting job to pretend that you're totally cool with somebody next to you who you're totally starstruck with. Because when I met her, I just wanted to tell her, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, how can you not? All you want to tell her is that.
Yeah, and obviously I did eventually, but I didn't want to scare her off and, you know.
Yeah, dude. You might have come off as a groupie at first.
It would have been
different. Yeah, it would have been different.
It would have been a little intense. But she was amazing as Teresa. And to go back with Mateo's duality, Brian Tannen and his writers team did a great job at creating this duality that Mateo had, which really helped me a lot in the episodes that I shot afterwards, because it exposed that Mateo had these traumas from years from Teresa. Teresa, you know, got him from the streets in his 20s, and they don't reveal what exactly happened, but she made him do some really dark shit.
What do you think that was, dude? Kind of fill in the blanks for us.
You know, just murders innocent people that did her wrong, you know, or that owed her money, or like, you know, a father of three that, you know, was probably a really nice guy, but Teresa, you know, wanted me to take him, you know? So just, I would create all these scenarios in my head, and even darker, you know? And then, wow. And then when the whole, you know, selling the women episode happened, it really showed how far she goes and how dark her storyline was. I think that was the catalyst, you know? So it was just great. I mean, I have no complaints about the way the character was written and this, the story arc.
What was the hardest scene for you to do in that show?
You know, the whole sequence of when they're selling the women and that whole art gallery.
Yeah, I remember that.
The energy was so tense. While we were shooting that it was uncomfortable for all of us. Like, we want, you know, I think it was the only time that we just wanted to get this over with, because just having all these beautiful women there, and, you know, even though it was fiction, there was a really dark energy, because I don't think it gets any darker than human trafficking, you know?
Yeah, I know, man.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, child and human trafficking is probably the darkest stuff out there, you know? So it was definitely, we could all feel that storyline. And it was very difficult to shoot, definitely.
Demian Bichir, man. This is a guy that I've met, that we have exchanged conversations, discussions. And when I saw Che and I saw his version of Fidel Castro, that dude became someone else to me, man. That dude became like cinema verite actor. Like, this dude was on another level.
Yeah, yeah. He is.
So what was it like to go toe-to-toe with that guy?
You know, number one, never taking it for granted. I have always, you know, I have a lot of flaws, but I can tell you one thing, I pat myself in the back, is that I never take for granted the people I work with. You know, I always vibe on a level of gratitude, you know? So to me, to share screen time with Demian was a gift, you know, was a gift as an actor, you know? So he was such a gracious actor, you know. He was so generous, you know, as an actor, sharing scenes. And when you work with him, you realize why he's so great. You know, he likes to build the scene. He likes to create the moment, from grabbing the pencil to the look in his eyes. You know, nothing is a coincidence. He definitely constructs these moments with you, and it was just great. I mean, I can say that Mateo and Santiago had some great chemistry, you know, even in their conflict. And I feel that the writers also felt that, because they would write us, you know, that's almost how the season ended, you know. It was it was in The Office, you know, with Santiago. It had to end that way. It was the full circle of that dynamic between the two of them.
Shalim, did Mateo kill Santiago?
We'll find out.
Obviously, you don't know. Or they don't... Wait a minute. Did they tell you and you can't say, or you don't know?
Brother, we don't know.
Oh, so they never wrote it.
I don't know. They might have wrote it, but they didn't tell us.
Okay, this is why Twitter went berserk.
Yeah. You know when we found out who killed Sky? On the table read of episode
13. So they treated this thing like Star Wars.
Pretty much, yeah. They disclosed very little information.
Now, why is that? Is that because they don't trust the actors?
Honestly, I would lie to you if I told you what's exactly their motivation. I can tell you that I support it. I like it. I like it. I like not knowing what I'm not supposed to know sometimes, you know?
But this is why Grand Hotel Season 2 needs to be renewed, you know? The whole cast has been supporting that idea, obviously. There's a Renew Grand Hotel Season 2 Twitter account.
Change.org link.
What? Really? I didn't know that one.
Yeah,
get out of here. Change.org
link. Yeah, dude.
Okay, so link. You can't leave shows like that and not think that the people that have invested 13 weeks of their lives to see every episode and maybe even binged it on demand is going to allow an ending like that to happen. Dude, they went crazy on the finale with Rita Moreno One Day at a Time, and yeah, they brought it back.
I love the fans who write me or bump into me on the street. And they think it's me, you know? And they're like, dude, you need to do something about this.
Yo, what is that like, dude, when someone's so invested in a show that they have to kind of break social code to kind of just talk about it?
It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. It's one of the most endearing, beautiful parts of this career, man. I mean, whoever doesn't enjoy that, it's missing out, you know.
Right,
I
right.
think because that's part of the fiction. That's part of the, you know, I am like that as a spectator. Like if I bump into Charlie Hunnam, I'd be like, man, you know, I would ask him 1,000 questions about Jax Teller, you know, and that's part of this. It's beautiful. I love it.
When the season finale happened, you were in Florida with your mom, your brother, your sister, your family, your kids.
My oldest, yeah.
What was that like to see yourself at 40 with your family, with your kids, with everyone that means anything to you, watching such a special moment of your career, an achievement, amongst these witnesses that are seeing you on TV while they're like sharing it with you right there?
It's like unlike any other experience you can have. I mean, it's what you said. This you don't get, even as an actor, you don't get those days every day. That doesn't happen every day, you know? So
to be able to share something like that.
Yeah, that's a moment. And then what I was going to say is when you add that the show you're watching is a show like Grand Hotel that is going to shock you the way the finale shocks you with all those twists and turns. And you see your loved ones around you with their jaws dropped, including my 10-year-old. That really makes it even more magical because it's not just, they're not just watching because they're supporting me. They're invested, you know?
How would you categorize Mateo? Is he a good guy or a bad guy to you?
I think he was once a good guy who turned... Life turned him bad because of certain circumstances. And I think that's why people, in a dark, twisted way, sympathize with Mateo a little bit. Because all of the reasons why he turned out to be the way he is are not revealed. But just enough is revealed for you to understand that this guy wasn't born with a gun in his hand, you know, and with an evil eye, you know. Life kind of like, you know, gave him, you know, those scars and made him, you know, cold-hearted. And it's cool. I like that. You know, I like that. I think there are moments when Ingrid loses the baby and when Santiago asks him to help him out. There's moments that you can see a glimpse of, you know, heart there, you know?
I don't want to see Mateo go. I know he got fired by Santiago. And the last scene we see is where he says...
Ingrid asks him, where are you going? And he says, to make one last mistake.
Where are you going?
To make one last mistake.
What a great line, the way you delivered that line.
It was a pretty good line.
Dude, how much working out did you have to do for that last scene, dude?
For those 15 seconds
for those
of free
15
time?
15 seconds. How much?
Oh my God, dude. Well, let's just say I don't have Lincoln Uni's 25-year-old metabolism, you know? So
that dude is so ripped, man.
That guy's ripped, yeah.
He's ripped.
I mean...
But you look great, man. I mean...
Thank you, man. But that
the tattoos... I was like, whoa, man, those tattoos are very... But dude, it goes with the character too, the tattoos.
It does.
But it was the first time in the whole show that your hair wasn't gelled up.
Yep. Yeah, second, the boxing scene.
Oh, that's right, the boxing scene.
And Ingrid, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the last time we saw you. You got up, and then you did that little turnaround.
Where are you going to make one last mistake?
And then cut to Santiago, yep. Man. So, wow, bro, man. Listen, I've enjoyed the show, and so has most of America. Obviously, you know, we're all rooting and supporting that ABC finally come clean at some point in the next couple of days and tell us the good news of them renewing season two. But you know, what else do you want to tell the fans, man, that have spent so much time with you in these last 2-3 months?
Oh, listen, I want to tell everybody who watched the show and who's written me on Twitter, and I've tried to answer it or retweet as much as I can, humanly can. But I just want to say thank you. I have never received this amount of outpouring love the way I did with Grand Hotel, and I will never forget that. I feel like, you know, I've really gotten the taste of how magical and beautiful and powerful social media can be, that it connects you with people you have never met. And you start gravitating in the same frequency with all these people. And it's such a unification that doesn't compare to anything else. So I just want to say thank you, you know, and if this is the end of the road, hopefully not. This will always be one of the most endearing, irreplaceable experiences I've ever lived in my career, and nothing will change that.
If you haven't seen Grand Hotel yet, go on demand, abc.com, or just, I think it's on Hulu too.
I believe it's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu.
I think it's on Hulu for a limited period of time.
And they're re-airing it, I think, right? Next Monday.
They're re-airing the season finale next Monday. So if you want to catch up before you watch the season finale,
then you got a whole week to do it, or you got the weekend too.
You got a whole week. Yeah, you can totally binge it.
No hay más nada que decir. Congratulations on an incredible job on Grand Hotel. We're crossing our fingers that it gets renewed for season two. But if it doesn't, your future is bright, man. So good luck with everything.
Take care, man. Thank you.
That's it for episode 125 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Shaleem and Mike Sargent for coming on the show. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please spread the love on social media and tell all your friends about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and my Facebook page, Jack Rico 40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.